There he is, the one and only Alan.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure.
A great friend of the and supporter of our station. He's done all kinds of things for us.
He has indeed. And he's still doing them.
Still doing. He hasn't given up yet.
And I'm still listening, listening to the station.
Exactly. Something and you wish everyone who worked at the station did. Not pointing any fingers.
I just said the other day I heard Mambo Italiano.
Which is the first time. Now it's time onto my 50th show. But that's all right, because it's not going to be on anymore. So there.
That's
is
right.
That right?
Caught it just in time.
Yeah, I'm morphing it into a new show.
Oh, it's so funny, because I was listening to it, but I didn't know it had been on for an anniversary amount.
Yeah. Yeah, anniversaries, you know. Well, as you know, Winter Walk is in its 20th anniversary.
Oh.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't know which year it was, although I knew it had been around for a while. And I had never been out to it until last year.
Really?
And I didn't know what a mob scene it was. And I thought, wow,
in a good sense, right?
Oh, yeah. Like it was
more like a flash mob than a riot.
Actually, there was a flash mob within Winter Walk last year. And it was
really?
A huge success.
Do you know what a flash mob is, Ellen?
I think I do.
Because I don't really know.
Oh, it's, first of all, it's like something that happens when nobody knows it's going to happen. I mean, it's a surprise. The one that I first flash mob I saw, because they were coming up on YouTube a couple of years ago, takes place in a food court in a big shopping mall. And it's holiday time, and people are sitting around eating, and you hear this organ begin to play. And then this guy who's dressed as a
janitor
in the mall starts singing. And then someone else stands up, and they have beautiful voices, and starts singing. Before you know it, the entire place is singing the Hallelujah chorus. So it's a surprise. It, you know, just happens. And people join in some instances. And last year, it was a dance thing. And
really?
Yeah.
So people just started dancing?
Yeah. Well, if they feel so inspired.
Yeah. No, I would have.
But you would. It's good exercise.
Yeah.
Well, for those listeners who haven't been to a Winter Walk in Hudson, Warren Street, the main drag is blocked off to traffic, and the street is filled with people. And there was a lot of youngsters dressed up in costumes that were really elaborate. And it's really quite a spectacle just to walk up and down the street, no cars, and all this revelry going on.
What we learned today, Brian, is that you too could dress up in a costume. Really, there are available costumes over at Opera House right as we speak.
Oh,
or if you just want a funny hat.
Yeah, a funny hat. I could see you as a, I think they said Munchkins or Oompa Loompas. What did they say, Munchkins? Or elves?
It's funny you say that because, you know, when I was a little kid in the first grade, we were doing a school play of The Wizard of Oz, and I was deadly afraid of being in a play. I didn't want to be in a play, and all the parts were doled out, and then I thought, oh, good, I won't have to do it, and I can just sit in the classroom and draw pictures. And the teacher said, and all the rest will be the winged monkeys.
Oh, God. Scared the crap out of me when I was a kid, those winged monkeys. So that was the scariest part, I think. It still scares me.
Well, I had to be a winged monkey.
Ooh.
But I didn't have a speaking part. There was one head wing monkey, and he had a speaking part. I guess he spoke on behalf of the rest of us.
Well, you were all excited when the witch dies, as I recall, in the movie.
Like, yeah, you're supposed to get excited.
Yeah,
that's right. When somebody's
that's old-fashioned fun.
Yes.
Well, Kenny Polinsky and some other people made these big heads of characters in The Wizard of Oz for some other parade, and they're waiting for people to reuse them.
Can you breathe in those things?
Can you breathe?
Yeah,
surely they must have some method for being
able to
breathe.
You can, but it's not nice, I'm
it's
sure.
Not right.
Yeah.
Especially if you've
well,
had
we
garlic
can find
for lunch.
You something more savory. But you said you thought that Olana was going to have a presence at Winter Walk and that you might be involved with them.
That's right. And so I will be standing with a podium in front of the Hudson Wine Merchants.
Oh,
really?
And, I'll be reading out loud the letters of Frederick Church.
Oh, that's cool.
And that'll be between 5 and 8. So I guess
I'll three hours you're going to be doing that?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, Ellen, if you know that Brian has done that up at Alana
as
well.
Yeah. So he did it. He's done it outdoors, though.
He's an endurance speaker.
Yeah, this will be outdoors. Although that's, it doesn't.
It's not the same as being in the woods. And
no, and it will. It'll. But I won't have my accordion, which is good because it doesn't like to be out in the cold for too long. Whereas I can be out in the cold.
Oh.
And I'm sure I'll be allowed to go indoors and have little breaks.
Sure.
Maybe even drink some hot chocolate.
Wow.
Well, you'll be at the, in front of the wine merchants, did you say?
That's the plan.
Okay. I think they'll have more than hot chocolate if you get my drift.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe cool. There'll be some hot toddy action.
Did Church write about Christmas at all, or the Christmas season?
Well, not that I remember. You know, I still have to go through a bunch of these letters because I was going to look for that. But, you know, I don't really remember him referring to Christmas. He does with Thanksgiving and then says, turkeys look melancholy around here.
You know, the turkeys always come out like a couple of weeks before Thanksgiving, and I think, wait a minute.
They're suicidal.
Don't they know what's happening?
No, they do. They don't. Every year they don't remember.
Yeah, it's a new crop.
Let me ask you, though, where you look at the actual letters of Church?
No, they have, I looked at binders of typewritten
transcriptions.
Up at Olana, and sometimes there'd be a photocopy of a page of the original letter. You would see his handwriting, but for the purpose of showing you a drawing, he often had drawings and diagrams in the letters. One of the letters to a friend ended with a drawing of a face, a head, and he says, "This head was drawn by my left hand. Copy it with your left hand and send it back."
Wow. And what was he trying to get the person to sign up for his art school?
I think he was just having fun.
Yeah.
Gosh, I can't imagine trying to draw with my left hand. Uh-huh. Or my right hand, for that matter.
There you go.
Yeah, well, it was really such a pleasure for me. You know, it was about a little over a year ago when I first did this, and it was Groundswell.
Groundswell. Sorry.
And so I got to read these letters, and they were so wonderful. You know, they're still not published except little excerpts and articles. And he's so, I mean, of course I knew he was interesting, but his letters are so interesting, and he has a peculiar sense of humor, which I always enjoy, and he had that really through his whole life.
Do you know where the originals are? Are they in the State Archive up in Albany?
I don't know where they are. I just assumed they had them there, but I don't.
No, I don't think they keep stuff like that.
I don't know where
they
got them.
I mean, are we talking about binders and binders, or just one selected?
It was a bunch of binders, because I went in there with the idea that, you know, I knew I had to fill up a lot of time, because I was doing that for 3 hours straight. So I went through these binders and put Post-its on the ones I wanted to get a photocopy of, and I didn't think I was going to really pick that many of them, but there were so many interesting ones, and they just kept bringing me more and more of these binders. So I started kind of from in his prime up until the end of his life. You know, I think the last letter was from 1899, and he died in 1900. And so then, since I still had time to research, then I went back to read from his very earliest letter that we have, up to the point where I began. And it was so interesting to see the young Frederick Church when he was a teenager writing to Thomas Cole very respectfully, asking if he could be his pupil, if he would allow him to study with him. And then there's a letter from a few years later when he's in his early 20s and writing to his pal in Hartford. Frederick Church was from Hartford. And it's so funny because you see the young Church and he has this very reckless sense of humor, and it's interesting to see him messing around with his peer, you know, young person, very funny. So interesting to go from the end of his life to the beginning of his life and see the contrast, but also to see the continuity even more than that.
That was in the era when people actually wrote letters. It's
oh,
wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love reading collections of letters. In fact, I like reading them more than biographies sometimes because you're framing a life with their own words rather than, you know, some biographer in between you and the person. Because
right.
Biography always implies a kind of vision of that person.
Yeah.
And it's often incorrect or imposing an artificial structure on someone's life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas when you're reading the letters, it's pretty, I mean, granted, people assume different persona when they're writing letters, but it's still the person speaking. You know?
Yeah, you're getting it from the horse's mouth.
Right.
And you have a sense, too, of the day-to-day thing of somebody sitting at their desk and writing a letter and, you know, having no thought towards it's really being, it's such a private communication. It's addressed to one person. I was unpacking
some books from storage the other day, and there was my 12 volumes of Byron's letters. Now, there are some letters worth reading. They're incredible. Yeah. You can read it straight through, and it's really enjoyable.
Hmm. I'll bet it is. I'll bet it is.
And I always shied away from reading letters when I was a younger reader because it just seemed hard, you know, because there's a lot of contextual information you need to know. But well-edited letters often provide some of that. And, you know, it really can be a better way of discovering a writer or an artist or a musician.
Oh, and you say, it's very direct. Yeah. You're getting it from the horse's mouth. And, I got to read a wonderful book recently that was a book of the journals of the painter Charles Birchfield, who, if he wasn't from Buffalo, he spent a lot of time there. But I think he's such a wonderful artist.
And a strange man, wasn't he?
Well, maybe so. I mean, I don't know. But just reading his letters, which is the only really sense I had of him outside of his paintings, and they start from, I don't know, maybe 1916 up into the 1960s. But so fascinating and poetic. And it was so interesting to peer into the world of this person through these letters.
I'm hoping that somebody collects my emails, Ellen.
Yeah, is anybody doing that?
I don't know. Email? Imagine plowing through other people's emails.
It's funny because, you know, when the writer Ralph Ellison died, he left a lot of his, you know, there's a famous second novel he never finished, but it was in many different versions. And all the different versions are at different stages of the computer age. So there are floppy disks, there are all these different things that, and actually an editor has tried to figure it all out. But you can imagine that's going to be the situation. I mean, let's say someone does try to recover a writer's emails. You know, it's going to be like, how do you do that?
It seems
you
impossible.
Know? Or will you do that?
Oh, there'd just be so much stuff to plow through.
Yeah. Because so many emails are just, but then even writers had ordinary letters. I mean, a lot of it was just, you know, back and forth with editors and publishers about factual stuff that didn't matter. So
I when I read a book of Flannery O'Connor's letters, even
The Habit of Being is one of the, that's fantastic.
And even the business letters are great.
They are. Well, that's it. There are some writers who made everything a matter of interest that way.
Yeah. And you know, when you were talking about Ralph Ellison, I think that, you know, he had a manuscript of that novel which burned up, but he said he remembered it.
Right.
And so then he started over and wrote again.
Right.
And so it's a good thing he had so much of it still in his mind.
Yeah. Hmm. That was in his house in Cummington, Massachusetts, that burned down.
What I've sort of been aware of is Frederick Church's invitations or letters to people who he was inviting to come and visit, and describing the way things looked, you know, the autumn colors or whatever.
Oh, yes.
And made me want, you know, wish I'd been there.
Oh, what fun they must have had.
Well, you know, they had this introductory film. They may have changed it by now, but the one I remember when I first went to Alana, it talked about, it quoted something about one of the visitors saying the afternoon was used for novels, naps, and correspondence. That's the way I want to lead my life. Novels, naps, and correspondence.
Well, I know you're big on the naps.
Yeah, right. The naps part I can do.
Yeah, well, but I'll sign up.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good plan to me.
Yeah.
In one of his letters, I think to his young pal, I think it's getting dark, as he writes, and he says, can you read this letter? I can't.
And for those of our listeners who haven't figured it out yet, Brian is an excellent reader. As you can tell, he has a great dramatic voice. So he'll be reading those Frederick Church letters in front of the Hudson Wine Merchant at Winter Walk. That's a pretty cool idea.
320. No, it's not 327. It must be 337.
I'll tell you in a second.
325 or.
Keep guessing, and I'll tell you when you're right.
Look, Tom has a special chart.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, that's a map of Winter Walk. Hudson, and I have a feeling you're not there because they hadn't told us about this.
341. Okay. 341.
341.
Well, I'll be out there.
Yeah. Are you going to, is there a Spotty Dog WGXC Christmas show this year?
You know, I think there is, although the date is still remaining to be
because you're always a big part of that, as I recall.
It will either be Friday the 16th or Sunday the 18th,
okay.
But they haven't decided. But
have you ever gone to that, Ellen?
What is it called?
It's I think it's sponsored by us, too, here at the radio, or we play it anyway, live. It's a Spotty Dog Christmas show.
Oh, no, I've never been.
And Brian has a couple of pieces he's done that are now famous, or maybe infamous. The famous knockdown between Santa and Jesus.
Wow.
No, no, it's Santa Claus and Father Christmas.
Oh, Father Christmas. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry.
But that's a good idea.
Yeah, Santa Claus. Yeah. Same difference.
But Jesus will be there, too.
Jesus will be there,
They'll all be there.
I'm usually away at Christmas time, so I guess I've never seen
it. Yeah, she's usually in the Bahamas.
Oh, sure.
with her pool boy.
Well, so have you performed at Winter Walk before?
Last year was the first time I performed in it and also my first time attending it. And I always had heard about it, but it was this thing, you know, and I live over in Catskill. So I'm not far away, but it's not like you walk out of your house and then there's this parade and you...
Yeah, right.
Well, back when I lived in New York, the marathon, the New York Marathon would come by very nearby where I lived. And
I would taken over the streets.
Oh, yeah. And I often didn't know that the marathon was coming. And I would go down to this bakery to pick up some bagels. And then there's this sea of people coming up the main drag. And it makes it very difficult to cross the street. So what happens is you have to run with them. And then once you get there and you're up to speed, then you can start wending your way from one side to the other as you cross. Across the sea of people.
Do people try to give you water and things like that?
It sounds like something Kramer would have done on Seinfeld. Yeah.
Well, by the time you are the same speed as the other traffic and get over there, then you have a little ways to walk back to backtrack to the bakery.
Because you're in like the Bronx by then.
Then you got to cross that sea again. So it was always this thing where each year it would be, this incredible flow of people. I remember seeing on TV, you know, they had a helicopter shot of all these people running over the Triborough Bridge, and you just see this blob, this amoeba of people from the air on the bridge. And it's like, wow, that's people. It was just like seeing a swarm of bees, a sea of humanity.
Sea of humanity.
Wow.
So we'll have our own sea of humanity here on Warren Street with no cars.
Yeah. Ellen, you used to run in the New York Marathon, didn't you?
No, never.
You sure?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, no,
am I sure? Yes.
I wouldn't be able to take it. Well, think of all the training you got to do.
First of all, I wouldn't walk on a bridge. I'd be way too petrified. I wouldn't even walk across the Rip Van Winkle, would you?
I've walked on the sidewalk along the side.
You have?
Yeah.
You don't get a little scared midway?
A little bit.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Well, there is a railing.
Yeah,
you can jump over it though.
You can.
Oh, you think you might?
Yes.
I mean,
well, you mean involuntarily?
Yeah.
You'll
you'll be
dazzled by the space, and you'll just involuntarily.
Well, I think you do think, what must it be like to be up here and say, "I'm going to jump now"?
Have you seen those videos of that new glass bridge in China?
No.
Oh, glass.
Man. It's glass bottomed.
Ooh.
Wow.
No,
or plexiglass or something like that.
So you can look down.
Can you imagine that? People crawling across the thing.
Yeah, I guess you'd have to watch out not to get vertigo.
Yeah. In any case, that's why I would never run the marathon. Not the 24 kilometers would bother me.
He's a CrossFit person.
Yeah,
but
I don't run long distance. No way.
Well.
So maybe we'll have that Spotted Dog Christmas to look forward to also.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, either Friday the 16th or Sunday the 18th, and who knows if it will appear on the Spotty Dog website, which is what? thespottydog.com.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So what else has happened in your life, Brian? Any other exciting performances or anything going on?
Well, I haven't got a performance schedule with this, but up in, I think, in Round Lake, New York, there's this hall. I'm going up there tomorrow to check out this wonderful three-manual tracker pipe organ. And I was at a place called The Hangar up in Troy seeing a concert, and somebody up there said, oh, I heard that you play the organ. Would you be interested in coming up and checking out this organ? So I'm going to check it out and see what sort of shape it's in. So that'll be exciting to do some kind of organ concert up there next year.
And where is that? What was the name of the place?
I think it's Round Lake. Round Lake, New York, which is north of Troy and south of Saratoga.
Have you ever played the organ at Helsinki? It's called a Hammond organ.
Oh, yeah. They have a Hammond and a Leslie cabinet there, although I have not played that one. But
You could go to, what is it called, the Tuesday night tryout.
Oh, yeah. Thing. Yeah, they have the open mic.
Open mic. A friend of mine calls it an open mic. I said, no, it's
I guess if you see MIC, it looks that way.
Yeah.
I saw Brian perform with Bobby Previtt at Helsinki, where he played his own instrument that he designed.
What was that?
Oh, I was playing an instrument called a swarmatron that my cousin Leon and I made together.
The swarmatron.
And which and is an electronic
And you played
instrument.
The accordion, I think, with Brian.
I played accordion, and sometimes I brought to my electric zither.
Ah, there you go.
Which has been around a while now.
That must be fun. Do you know Michael Hurst?
Yes, I do.
He's made some instruments, too.
Well, folks, I hate to cut you off, but it turns out it's time to go because we have to do
that
smooth
transition.
It's almost
the top of the hour.
Thank you, Brian DeWan, for coming in. Winter Walk this weekend, folks, on Saturday. And we have to say goodbye because they got to take over there in Accra.
And thank you for listening.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, too. Yeah, whatever.